You can roll the PowerPoint whenever you get ready, Jason. When I was growing up farther south, we had a lot of women at our church who liked to tell me what to do. And nothing's much changed since I was a kid. But I remember being 5 and 6 and 7 years old and running around in the church and having quite a few women either grab my arm, grab my ear, grab my hair, grab my neck, grab the back of my pants. And I can still name those women by name. And I can tell you that I still very much miss those women. And more than half of them are now deceased. But I want to tell y'all that having those ladies in that church in my life shaped who I am. And being a part of a community as a young child, having adults who weren't afraid to tell me what to do, my mama couldn't be everywhere. But more than that, I was part of a community, and I was expected to toe the line. And, you know, third time's a charm. When Johnny or one of the elders, when Johnny or one of the elders have, one of those older ladies knew I just took my coat off in church, they would still grab me by the back of the neck. But while I got it off, let's just keep it off. When Johnny or one of the elders have to give an announcement about, you know, your kids or tell us what to do with our kid, nobody likes doing that, especially my generation. So I'm speaking to my generation or generation after my generation. If we have to tell your kids to stop running, that's your fault. That's your fault. And I know nobody likes to hear that about our kids. How can you say that? Because this is the church, and this is a community. And sometimes it's good to have a community to tell you that it's better to do this with your children. That's how we learn to raise kids. We don't know how to raise kids. I got told how to raise kids by older people who raise kids. And sometimes I take their advice, and sometimes I don't. So we just ask that everybody kind of watch your kids. You got kids that are running? Can't do that no more. That's outlawed now. You got to walk. But to be honest with you, if your kids ever go to a hospital, they can't run in there neither. And if they ever go to downtown Nashville, you can't run there neither. And so we might as well get used to it. So if your kids are used to running inside, that's not kosher. And that's not proper etiquette. And so I think the church is actually the best place to learn that. The reason is because we love you. And we love your kids. And those ladies loved me. And those ladies never thought twice about telling my mother what I was into. And most of the time when I got in trouble, it was because some woman had told my mother what I did. And I had embarrassed her or shamed her. Even there were some women when I got older who told other ladies that their daughters should not date me. So, you know, luckily they didn't make it to Kim's mother in time. But in any case, you know, when the elders say that, I'm proud to have elders who remind us this is it's not a jungle gym, it's not a recess. We come here for worship, and we need to do that. And I mention those women for a reason. Those women never had a problem telling any of the men what they needed to do. Even my dad, who was the preacher, you know, they would tell him what he needs to do. I remember one such sermon. A guy got up there, he was a deacon, and he wanted to give a sermon, and he decided that what he would do is he would get up there and tell a story. And some of the ladies didn't mind that, but he got up there and he said, "Let me tell you a story about the time when the devil went down to Georgia." And I remember thinking, this is going to be a cool story. You know, I'm 6 years old. You know, this is going to be nice. And I still remember the guy saying he was a good storyteller. He said, "The devil went down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal." And I'm like, "Oh man, is this in the Bible? Where is this at?" And I could feel the tension in the church as the man began to say, and he started to recite these lines. Now, I just said the devil went down to Georgia. How many of you have heard that line before when I say that? Okay, how many of you have no idea what I'm talking about when I said the devil went down to Georgia? Three of us. All right. When he said that line, I was young. I didn't know that there was more to that story. But the rest of the church did, because all y'all know that's a Charlie Daniels song. Now, the reason the tension got a little thick is because y'all know at some point during that song, Charlie Daniels says a curse word. And I didn't know why it was thick, but those ladies knew why it was thick. How much of this song he going to recite? What's he going to say when he gets to that part? And, you know, I still remember that, you know, however young I was as a small child, remembering that in the church, and I remember some of those ladies telling him that was not proper to be spoken of in the Lord's church. But I remember that, and I'm reminded of that when Brooks read that parable about the tenants. Because when Jesus tells the story, he's not making this story up. Jesus didn't create this story. When Jesus says, let me tell you a story about a tenant who went to the vineyard to check on his vine. When he says that, everybody who's heard it knew he's quoting a song. It's a song they all knew. It'd be like me reciting Charlie Daniels. Everybody in here knows the song. Now, you may not know that song. But this morning, instead of staying in Matthew 21, we'll come back to that at the end. That's how you'll know we'll be done. But if you got your Bibles, I want you to go to Isaiah 5. Because Jesus didn't make it up. When he does it, he's actually just reciting a song that most of us already know. I'm going to keep my coat off. Is that okay with everybody? Anybody got? Speak now, forever hold. You raise your hand. We won't see who you are. Okay. Well, there it is. You can't say nothing later. I asked you. I got a vest, so I'm halfway, you know, in uniform. Isaiah 5. In Isaiah 5, Isaiah says, let me sing you a song about a friend of mine. And this friend, Isaiah says, was the owner of a vineyard. And I want you to notice what Isaiah says. Isaiah says, this man who owned this vineyard, he paid attention to his vineyard. When you start to read the song, he says, he paid attention to the soil. You know, he dug it up and he cleared the soil of the stones. He made sure he used the best materials. You know, Isaiah says he planted the choicest of vines. And then he paid attention to the kind of vineyard this was going to be. He built a watchtower in it, cut a wine press in it. And then God has this line in this song, because y'all know God is actually the master in this story. God says, all this stuff I did, what more could I have done to make this vineyard profitable? Anybody in here ever sow grass in your yard? Just me? Yeah. Anybody in here tried to get rid of all the grass you had and plant new grass, like fescue? Yeah. Those of you who are raising your hand, how many of you did that work? Yeah. How many of you the crabgrass didn't take over in about 6 months? Went with a friend of mine to pick up an Exmark lawnmower yesterday, and the guy who was selling it, his yard was pristine. I mean, it looked like somebody, it was like neon green. I mean, it was nice. It looked like carpet. And we got out there, and as the man was talking to us, every once in a while he would bend down and pick up a blade of grass and pull it out. And then he would look at the edge, and I said, sir, what are you? I mean, I wouldn't buy a lawnmower. I didn't care what he thought of me. I said, what are you looking at? And he said, you get that crab grass and you get the weeds and they just get in your grass. And I said, yeah, I mow mine. And he said, well, I don't like those in my grass. He said, it's taken me 10 years to get this yard like I want it. And I said, well, how did you do it? And he said, I dug up the whole yard. This guy's got an acre, like front and back. Well, obviously, he's got a lot of money, too. And he said, I dug up the whole yard, brought in new dirt, and then I planted fescue. And then he paid, because he has a lot of money, he dug up his neighbor's yard and planted fescue. And so in order to keep his yard looking good, he had to keep his neighbor's yard looking good. I said, why? He said, because my neighbor is lazy. And he'll let any grass he wants grow in his yard. I said, what's that got to do with you? He said, because then that grass creeps over onto my grass. And I said, well, this neighbor doesn't look like that their grass touches yours. He said, I know, because I dug a gravel drive in between the yards. I thought, wow. You know, you learn a lot going to buy a mower with a friend. And I was talking to my friend on the way home. I said, number one, we've learned that guy's rich. Number two, We've learned he cares a lot about his grass. But number three, when we left, we probably shouldn't have backed into his yard. Yeah. Glad he didn't know my name. But I thought about that guy when Brooks was reading this. And I thought about that guy when I read Isaiah 5. God says, what more could I have done? I dug this place up, you know, watered it three times a day, got all the new crops, and even put a watchtower in it, you know, watching, you know, looking up, make sure nothing got on it. God doesn't just talk about a vineyard in Isaiah. I don't know if y'all know this or not, but when God mentions vineyards, it's in all the prophets. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Hosea, Psalm 80. The idea of a vineyard is how God refers to his people. And I don't know if you know this, but in every single story that talks about a vineyard, God goes to check on it to see what it looks like. And in every single story, God lays waste to the vineyard. Every time he goes to check on his crops, God just burns it. Why? In Ezekiel, God says, I went to check on my vineyard and there was no fruit. There's nothing. No, I spent all this money, spent all this time. I got nothing. Or what about Jeremiah? In Jeremiah and in Hosea, God says, I went to check on my vineyard, found a big old mess. Everything was overgrown. So many of y'all's houses got them vines that just start growing up the front of the house. And you look at it and you pass by and you think, I got to pull those. I got to pull those. And then next year, what happened? You didn't pull them. Now they're creeping up on your window. Some of y'all's houses look like this picture right here. Yeah, y'all need to get to put them grandkids to work. Y'all need to go out there and pull that off. But this is what happens when you don't pay attention to your crops. This is what happens when you don't pay attention to your mulch beds. They get weeds. God says, I went to check on my vineyard. It's all overgrown. Do y'all know why the people are so overgrown? The people are running wild? Do you know why sometimes our kids have this behavior that we can't correct? Because we have not been correcting them. I know we don't want to hear that. And I'm just as guilty too. Kids start doing stuff. Well, they're getting out of hand. They got out of hand a long time ago. But they keep getting out of hand. This is what happens to society. We're just allowed to go unchecked. God says, this is what happened to my vineyard. They didn't check themselves. But Isaiah is the worst one. You know, Ezekiel, he said they ain't had no fruit. In Jeremiah, he says they're all overgrown. But when you get to Isaiah, Isaiah says, I got there. And the fruit was rotten from the core. Y'all ever smelt rotten fruit? Y'all ever thrown rotten bananas in the trash, didn't take the trash out? Yeah, it's nasty, ain't it? God says, I got to my vineyard. You could smell it before you got there. It's nasty. If you're in Isaiah, I want to show you why the fruit is so rotten, and this is why in the church the vineyard is still so important. When God comes back, what kind of church will he find? In Isaiah chapter 5, verses 8 and 9, the reason God said he wanted to burn this vineyard is because he saw people who were participating in an economy where few people benefited and the rest of them were worked to death. Chapter 5, verse 8, he says, woe to you who add house to house, who join field to field, till you ain't got no space left. You live alone in the land. And he says in verse 9, surely thy great houses will become desolate, thy fine mansions will be left without occupants. A 10-acre vineyard will produce only a bath of wine. You know, we add house to house to house. We want our houses to get bigger. We want our TVs to get bigger. We want our life to get bigger. We want to add another acre to our land. Our neighbor sells theirs. We want to buy that. We want to put in a new driveway over here. And who does that benefit, folks? You. You. Here's the second, verse 11. The reason he wants to destroy this vineyard is because it's full of self-absorbed, self-indulgent lifestyle. Look at verse 11. He says, woe to those who rise early in the morning to run after their drinks, who stay up late at night till they get inflamed with wine. 9 o'clock, time to get it early. All people seem to care about is themselves. Or how about this, the third reason, verse 18. Because we become so short-sighted. He says, woe to those who draw sin with cords of deceit and wickedness with cart ropes. Woe to those who say, oh, let God hurry, let him hasten his work so we can see it. Let it approach, let the plan of the Holy One of Israel come so that we may know it. There's too many of us who just, we're too short-sighted. We want to make the quick buck. We want to fix it quick. There's a reason y'all can't fix stuff quick. I say y'all, we. There's a reason we can't fix stuff quick. It's because we'll go and break it again. If you're not used to living a certain way, if you just try to live all of a sudden a new way, it's not going to work. People who become short-sighted are people who become destroyed. How about number four? He wants to destroy it because, in verse 20, deliberate sin likes to abuse God's grace. He says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, and who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. There is not a time where y'all can't be forgiven. There is not a time where you cannot be baptized. There is not a time you cannot come back to the Lord. But I want us to think real, real hard about living however you want with the mentality that hopefully before you die, you just get some forgiveness and get that blank check grace. I want you to think real hard about living a life that is deliberately in contradiction to the Word of God with an idea that I'll just slide back in real quick. I'm not telling you you can't. I'm just telling you might want to plan better than that. A life that is lived in deliberate rebellion is not a life that inherits the kingdom of God. There's a reason God chucks the vineyard, because it's no good. It's rotten fruit. How about this last one? Verse 22. Woe to those who are heroes at drinking wine, champions at mixing drinks. Verse 23. Woe to those who acquit the guilty for a bribe and deny justice to the innocent. The stuff we brag about online now is like an all-time new low. I mean, seriously. God says, woe to those who, What did you do in life? Well, I was really good at beer pong. Yeah, we might want to get some new standards. What are our standards? Sometimes I think the standards are so low I don't even know where they are. What are our standards? If we're waiting for society to set the standards, you can step right over those things. Them standards are pretty low. I actually heard a guy last week bragging about that he took care of his children. I kind of thought I was supposed to do that when my kids were like, that's just what you're supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do. A woman she was talking about, she said, I've been with him for 21 years. And I thought, and? When y'all got married, did you think it was just a 2-year thing? And if you stay in it for another 18, you get a pin, or maybe you get a watch, or maybe we get a retirement pension or something like that. I don't know. What did you think it was? Why are the standards so low? If you get married, it's for life. Moving on. Let's raise the standards. But you know what? You know why she said that? Because the standards are so low now. That's a big thing. You know how I know that? Because she'll say, I've been with him for 21 years. And in the pagan world, they'll say, oh, bless you. Like, that's a big deal. It surprises me, you say that in church. Half of our church says, and? We got 3 times that. Let's think about the church. You start seeing that the standard is a lot higher, which is why it's so important. It's why the church and the people of God are so important in individual lives. Isaiah talked about rotten fruit. And when Israel came back from exile, they decided, we're going to be the new vineyard. In fact, when you look at Jewish money in Jesus' day, y'all see what's on the back of that coin? Grapes. We are the vineyard of God. That's on their money. I mean, we all got In God We Trust. This is on their money. We are the vineyard. And Josephus even says, when you look at the Jewish temple, guess what was above the door? Grapes. When you go to church, you are reminded that you are the temple of God. And when you walk in, everybody knows we are the vineyard. And when God comes back, what kind of vineyard will he find? Jesus made a trip into the temple. And along the way, he found a fig tree. Fig tree looked like it's going to have some fruit on it. It looked like it. But when he got close, what did he find? It was barren. When he walked into the temple, what did he find? It looked like it was going to produce fruit. But like Ezekiel and Jeremiah and Psalm 80 and Isaiah, all he found was rotten fruit or no fruit or wild vines. Thursday, I didn't eat breakfast, and I was in a hurry because I, didn't plan well. And I was in a part of town I didn't know where anything was, and I wanted something to eat. So I got my phone out, and I put in the GPS, Dunkin' Donuts. I just put in Dunkin' Donuts. And so it told me where one was, and I drove to one, and I looked, and it was just a building. It used to be a Dunkin' Donuts, but it wasn't a Dunkin' Donuts anymore. GPS said it was here, so obviously nobody told Apple that they moved or that they shut down. So I told my phone, Dunkin' Donuts, and it said, you're right here. I'm saying, I'm talking to a machine. No, I'm not. So what's the next Dunkin' Donuts? So it told me, oh, it's 2 miles away. So I back out and I go to that Dunkin' Donuts and I go through the drive-thru and I said, I need a medium coffee and I need a coffee cake muffin. Taylor, you got those at your Dunkin' Donut? Oh, yeah. So I said, I want a coffee cake muffin. And she said, sir, we don't have coffee cake muffins. So it's cool. That's cool. That's all right. How about a blueberry muffin? She said, sir, we're out of blueberry muffins. I said, what do y'all have? She said, sir, we have donuts. I said, oh, I should have known. Yeah, I should have had donuts. I go to a Dunkin' Donuts expecting to get some. I didn't get it. I thought they had the muffins I wanted, but they didn't have them. You know what happened? I got mad. You know who I blamed? Dunkin' Donuts. Because they sold out of what I wanted. You might think that's a little petty. When God comes back to find what he thinks he should find and he don't find it, I hope you don't think he just smiles and says, that's okay. We'll try next time. Not going to be it next time. We're going to shut this one down. Church, this story that Jesus tells is an age-old story. Notice in Matthew, this text that Brooks read, when Jesus tells this parable, it's like saying devil went down to Georgia. We just heard this story in Isaiah. Look, verse 33, chapter 21. He says, let me tell you a story. There's a landowner who planted a vineyard. He put a wall around it. He dug a wine press in it. He built a watchtower. Then the landowner goes and rents the vineyard to some farmers and moves to another place. Verse 34. When the harvest time approached, he sends his servants to the tenants to collect his fruit. God comes back. He wants to get a return on his investment. Well, the tenants seized his servants. They beat one, they kill another, they stone the third. Then he sent other servants to them more than the first time. The tenants treated them the same way. And then finally, verse 37, he says, I'm going to send my, what? Son. They'll respect my son, he said. But when the tenants saw the son, they said to each other, oh, here comes the heir. Let's kill him and take his inheritance. And so they took him and they threw him out of the vineyard and they killed him. I want you to imagine that you have some extra land and you rented it to some others and then you went to collect your rent. You sent your child to go get the rent check and they killed your child. Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those tenants? No, no. Now remember, the Jews and the leadership claims to be the vineyard of God. It's on the doors. It's on the money. We got it everywhere. And Jesus says, all right, let's use that story. God comes back. He comes back to his vineyard, and he's looking, and he don't find nothing, and he sends his son, and his son comes, and you kill the son. What do you think God should do to those tenants? And notice how they respond. Verse 40. They walk right into Jesus' trap. They say, well, verse 41, he's going to bring those wretches to a wretched end. And then he should go rent that vineyard to other people who will give him his share of the crop at harvest time. That's what he should do. And I think Jesus is thinking to himself, couldn't have said it better myself. They walked right into it. Jesus says, well, what do you think God should do with you? God should just get rid of us and give it to somebody else. I say we do that. And then a few verses later, Matthew says Jesus abandons the temple. He's done. He's done. Because the fruit here is so rotten, there's nothing else we can do to it. So here's what I want us to think about this morning. Jesus tells them in John, he doesn't just say, I'm the vine and you're the branches. He doesn't just say that. Jesus says, I am the real vine. Or some of you have, I'm the genuine vine. I'm the true vine. Jesus says, I know y'all claim that y'all are the vineyard, but really, I'm the vineyard. When the gardener comes back one last time, church, what will he find here at Una? What will he find? He might find a people whose money says, in God we trust. He might find a people whose pledge of allegiance says, one nation under God. And he might find a church with a nice cross in their steeple. But will he find any fruit? Here's what I want us to do. I want us to pay attention to our soil. Good soil makes good fruit. I know this. Bad soil makes bad fruit. This is just A equals B. This is how you do this. You got an infection in your soil. You got a virus in your dirt. Your crop's not going to be good. So we got to pay attention to our soil. And the only way, I'm going to give y'all like the three basic things to do. So you're having trouble with your spiritual life, I'm going to give you three basic things. I can't like guarantee you're going to go to heaven, but I'll tell you that if you practice this, you will be on a good track to have a good vineyard. I didn't say it'll be great, but it's the most basic things. I'm setting the bar real low this morning. I'm going to give you a real low bar. And if we can just meet this bar, we can move on. But if we can't meet this bar, you're going to have some serious trouble. We got serious trouble. So we're going to set the bar low. Number one, read your Bibles. Read your Bibles. I know it's tough. We don't read no more. We like to watch stuff. I'm with you. I'm with you. I'd rather watch. If you can tell me something in 2 minutes versus I got to read something in 20 minutes, I'd rather watch it and get done. The text is extremely important for your life. And we got to pay attention to our soil. And if you can find a way to include the Bible in your life, then I think your soil will be better. Your fruit will be better, I promise you that. Because I know we reading a lot of stuff and we watching a lot of stuff. And whatever you goes into your eyes and your ears will come out of your mouth and your heart. So the fruit you produce depends on what goes in. And I know for a lot of us, me included, we got too much junk going in. I think we might ought to change that out. Here's a second. We need to be well-watered. We need to try to make a commitment to be in the church, to go to church. Some of you only come on Sunday mornings, and I'm not going to condemn you for that, but some of us come on Sunday mornings, and then we miss a couple weeks, and I know we got stuff to do. But if you go a month without being in the church, you've had 1 hour being near people who are interested in Jesus. You're not being watered very much, and you're not going to be able to grow very much. And there are a lot of people I know who say, I can't believe the Lord's allowing this to happen in my life. I'm not sure the Lord's allowing that. I kind of think you don't water yourself. Kind of think you're not around the people of God. You're not around the church. And when you're not around a family and the community of faith, when you're not around that, your life will be harder. If you can disagree with that, you'll be wrong. My coat's off, so I'm more, boastful now, I guess. But you're wrong. You cannot make it without the church. You cannot make it without the influence of the church. There's no way I could have been the man I am without those women in my life. And those women, I don't think any of them knew my name. I was either boy or child or sir or you or a few other words I won't say in church. Those women told me what I was going to do. Hey, boy. Hey, boy. Child, come here. Where your mama? Where your mama at? I thought, oh, I'm dying. I'm going to die. I'm dead. I'm a dead man. As soon as, even to this day, somebody said the other day, I heard him say, child. I was in public. It said, child. And I went, ooh, oh, okay. Ooh, whoo. I started sweating. You know, it's like, you know, you just like went back in time or something. But they just snapped, you know, child. Or one of them had this big old, she wore this huge ring. It was a huge, don't go there. It wasn't that dark. But she had this huge ring. And whenever I would do something, she would go like that in church. Yeah, on the pew. Yeah, they don't play. They just, you know, and if you heard that, you know there's a child. You remember that Christmas story, every time you hear a bell, angel get his wings. No. If you hear Sister Myra do that, that means some child died. You know. Uh-oh. And number one, the first thing you thought was, is it me? If you was passing a note, you just took it back and put it in your pocket. If you was trying to open a Jolly Rancher too loud. But it would just, sometimes it would just be, and my dad got used, he would just keep on preaching. But he knew, uh-oh. And sometimes he would stop and kind of look over and make sure it was me or not, you know. And you knew that if she racked her ring, you knew after church, you was going to get it. And the funny thing about it, I kept thinking, why's my dad let these women do this to me? You know, he don't care about me. You know what, my father, you know why he did that? Because he cared about me. And he thought it was healthy for me to be subject to the community. But I tell y'all, when I got to be 10, 11, I didn't talk in church no more. And when I was 12, when I looked at somebody, I looked them in the eye. And when I shook somebody's hand when I was 13, I had a strong grip. By the time I was 15, I still do it to this day. It was always yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Just habit. And females, it's always Mrs. somebody and Mr. And some of you have said, oh, no, you can't do that. And I try to tell you, that's almost in my DNA. I can't get it out. It kind of got beat into it. It kind of got stapled on. But, you know, even now that I'm 38, I still need a community. Still need help. Still need to be watered. Why is it that we think that we get old and we don't need to be watered anymore? That's the dumbest thing in your mind. Why is it? The older we get, there ain't nothing here I can learn. Proverbs has a special word for people like that. Fool. My last church, there was a woman named Miss Clara. I think she's 95 now. She was the oldest woman at our church. She went down to Texas. I was going to say she went down to Georgia, but she went down to Texas. She went down to Texas to see her daughter-in-law or see her daughter, I don't remember. But while she was down there, she fell in the bathroom, broke her hip. Either she broke her hip and fell, or she fell and broke her hip. You know, it's one or the other, but y'all understand what I'm saying. Broke her hip. Well, she can't get on a plane. She can't come back. So she stayed down there. They're trying to get her well, and she's in the doctor's office. And I actually got to talk to the doctor. She said, you know, talk to my minister, and he's up in Maryland, and just talk to him. And so I talked to him, and I said, I don't know why I'm talking to you. And he said, she doesn't want us to speak to her family. She wants us to speak to her church. And I said, oh, no. I mean, I don't have her bills. I don't have her checkbook. He said, oh, no. It's fine. But she's concerned that she won't be able to make it home. And so I assured her she would. And some of our ladies even flew down to Texas to see her in that rehabilitation center to encourage her. And we had other men sending her cards. It took her 6 months to get back to Maryland. And she flew back, and we had 22 people meet her at the airport and then take her to her place. And then Sunday morning, she strolled in on that walker, just barely, just crying. And she said, all I could think about was coming home. Maryland wasn't her home. That wasn't where her family was. But it was where her church was. And to her, life was bound up where the water is. It's amazing how much better your life is when you know where to get the water. Here's the last one. I'm telling you, the standards are really low this morning. Read your Bible, go to church, and bear some fruit. In Isaiah chapter 5, verse 7, it's a really strong line, but the English misses it. In Isaiah 5, verse 7, God says, I went looking for justice, but I only found bloodshed. I went looking for righteousness, and all I heard was distress. The English kind of misses this. In the Hebrew, it's this. God says, I went looking for mishpat, and all I found was mishpak. I went looking for zelecha, and all I found was zeachwa. It's like I went looking for good deeds, and all I found was good grief. I went looking for community, and all I found was chaos. God says, I went to find what I had planted, and all I found was disaster. Church, when the master comes back to check on his vineyard, what's he going to find? When he comes back to see if he's going to get a return, what kind of vineyard will he see? Here's what I'd like for us to do in planting fruit. I want us to spend more time telling people how they can have a relationship with God than telling them that they don't have one. We're really good at telling people you're far away from Christ. You need Jesus. There's a woman I grew up with, she used to tell me that, you need Jesus. Where's your daddy? We're really, really good at telling people that they need Christ in their life. You know what we're really bad at? Not telling them how to get it. Not showing them the path. You know what else we're really good at? We're really good at spending a lot of time in issues that the Bible doesn't talk about. We spend a whole lot of time, energy, and money, and speech, talking, and addressing things that Jesus really never addressed. They're important things. And we really don't spend a lot of time at all talking about the things that the Bible actually talks about. And it makes for rotten fruit. Something else I think we do is we spend more time thinking about me, ourselves, and how I can be better instead of thinking about how I can better you. When God comes back, what will he find? The Lord will come back, and he's going to look for a return on his investment. I would like for us to start thinking about what kind of vineyard we're going to be. Because there are only two ends to this. Either we bear fruit or we burn. There's no middle ground. I'd like there to be a new standard here at the Unity Church of Christ. And I'd like for when people see our church, they say, that is a fruitful vineyard. How's your fruit? Let's stand and sing.